I wanted to show this picture, which you can find in Jack's book, of an introverted Jaeger disc. And this may have been the first time I saw such an introverted Jaeger disc, which is essential in the proof I will present today, which is central. So I will just move this. So thank you, Jack, for being a source of inspiration for lots of us. So Arno has been giving a talk about introverted Jaeger disc 2 days ago, where I was controlling the shape of the Jaeger disc from below, showing that you could put a set inside the Jaeger disc and control the area of the Jaeger disc. And today I should try to control the shape of the Jaeger disc from above and show that it's contained in some set. Does not go too far. So I prepared this yesterday, so there may be typos, or we'll see. And so this is just for recall some notations, but we have been using them already. The quasi polynomial P theta, which has a critical point, if the formula is not correct, it's not really important. Then the post-critical set, I will be dealing with post-critical sets today. The post-critical set is just the orbit of the critical point. You just take the critical point and look at the orbit of the critical point. So dynamically, it's of course a relevant set. We just saw in the previous talk that we could look at the case where the post-critical set is as just a finite set of accumulation. So here it will just be the opposite. We will be dealing with dynamics where the dynamics is conjugate to rotation. There is a Jaeger disc, and the post-critical set is dense in the boundary of the Jaeger disc. So it's just the opposite case. And we are interested in controlling this this post-critical set. And of course, I will use the notation of continued fraction. I will deal with continued fractions. So this is just the notation for the continued fraction, a naught plus 1 over a1 plus 1 over a2 plus and so on. And if you like, you can put plus or minus, but I will just, I prefer to cheat and just put plus even if I use minus. So when the rotation number is an angle of bounded type, so I say that we say it's of bounded type if the integers in the continued fractions are bounded. It's a bounded sequence. Then, in that case, it's known that the first, it's known due to results of Ziegler that the polynomial is linearizable. The dynamics is conjugate to rotation near the fixed point. So here in this picture, the fixed point is inside the field integer set. The dynamics is conjugate to rotation in the neighborhood of this fixed point. And the boundary of the Ziegler disk is a Jordan curve. I will have to use this fact that it's a Jordan curve at some point in the proof. Well, more is known. It's known due to due to result of Douady, G, Serman, Schoenteck, I may forget some people, that the boundary of the Jaeger disk is a quasi-circle, in fact, going through the critical point. And I will also use the fact that it goes through the critical point. And the boundary is precisely equal to the closure of the post-critical set in this setting. So now I will use in the proof, and this is the place where we use the results of Inoue and Shishikura. So I will have to put some extra assumptions on my numbers that the entries in the continued fractions are all sufficiently large. So I will just restrict my study to the set Sn of irrationals where all the integers in the continued fractions are larger than some capital N. I will explain why later, but the point is that Inoue and Shishikura already observed that their techniques were allow the control on the post-critical set. And there has been questions around for a long time about the boundary of Ziegler disks that were was not nobody was able to answer them before Inoue and Shishko and their techniques. So really this assumption, I will have to use it, and I will use Inoue and Shishikawa results in my talk. So the theorem I want to prove is the following. The theorem I would like to prove is, would be the following. Consider theta which is of bounded type. Then the boundary of the Ziegler disk, which is, so this picture is borrowed from Douady's talk. Then the, where is the stick? The boundary of the Ziegler disk for theta is a Jordan curve. And then you will perturb theta. You will choose your theta of bounded type, and you will perturb it. So theta prime is no longer of bounded type. Theta prime is just close to theta. It's a near rational number. And you want to have information about the post-critical set of P theta prime. And the information you want to know is that this post-critical set does not go too far out of the initial Ziegler disk. So this is stated in the theorem as the semi-distance. So the distance of a set, semi-distance of x to y is just the distance, the supremum of the distance of points in x to y. It's not symmetric. So it's stated in terms of the semi-distance of the post-critical set of P theta prime to the closed Ziegler disk should tend towards zero as theta prime tends to theta. So again, the assumption is theta is of bounded type, but theta prime a priori may not be of bounded type. Okay, we are not able to prove this theorem in full generality. We are only able to prove it when the integers in the continuous fraction are sufficiently large. That's why there is this assumption. There exists an integer so that if all the entries of the considered numbers are large enough, then you can control the post-critical set of small perturbations. They do not go too far out of the initial Ziegler disk. So the, for theta prime, all the entries should be larger than n. They don't need to be bounded, but they should all be larger than some capital N. And you should converge to a theta where the entries are all larger than capital N, but bounded for theta. Okay, so we will apply this in the case, in fact, where theta prime is also of bounded type, but not the same bound. And since theta prime is again of bounded type, this will correspond to the boundary of the perturbed Ziegler disk. And so the perturbed Ziegler disk will not go too far out of the initial Ziegler disk. It can only come inside. There are digitation, and it somehow you have a, I don't know which one, you have a semi-continuity. You have to figure out if it's the upper or lower semi-continuity of the closed Ziegler disk when you deal with number with a large enough entry. So the perturbed map can be of Cramer type, it can be of parabolic type, in fact, also. Then the post-critical set will be well inside. Again, if the control is only when the entries are large enough. While this result should not surprise Inoue and Shishikura, who somehow already knew that you can, using their techniques, you can do a control on the post-critical set. So I will try and explain where there is a refinement of what they are doing. Okay. So let me also emphasize that the hypothesis of theta being a bounded type is it's not necessary, but you have to put some hypothesis. If you want to know that you don't go too far out of the Ziegler disk, since the post-critical set contains at least the critical value. You need the critical value to be close to the boundary of the Ziegler disk. But if you take theta, a Cramer number, you have no Ziegler disk. If you take theta, a number where the Ziegler disk does not go through the critical value, there is no hope that the perturbed post-critical set don't go too far out of the Ziegler disk. So you probably have, you may expect a semi-continuity on the post-critical set instead of considering the Ziegler disks. But, well, I will really use in the proof I will present, the fact that theta is of bounded type, and I will try to emphasize why I use it. So, I will recall some results we saw yesterday. I told you that the key ingredient in the proof is in fact Inoue and Shishikura's result techniques of renormalization, and the fact that there is a certain class which is invariant under renormalization, under some renormalization. So I will just recall quickly that the class considered is just the class of map F which have the following structure. The goal is always the same. The goal is a disk of radius 4 over 27 times exponential minus 4 pi, so something explicit. And the domain here is flexible. It's just a question of having some structure. So as Mitsu explained yesterday, you should imagine that you take any open subset of the Riemann sphere, you map it conformally to this subset, and then you post-compose with F. And the map of in your class are maps which are composition of first a univalent map and then some explicit map, which was the polynomial z times 1 plus z squared. Moreover, what was called the class F1 yesterday is a set of maps where you fix 0 with derivative 1, which forces not every initial univalent simply connected domain. It must have a good conformal radius to be mapped to this set with derivative 1 at the origin by the conformal map. So this is the class of map considered. And I will just, as Mitsu explained yesterday, I will see the structure differently to relate to pictures I will show later on. I will just identify C star to C mod Z, which means just pass to the universal covering via exponential 2i pi Z, and see what structure you have on top when you pass to the universal covering. Just to show you the picture again, but you saw them yesterday. And so if I pass to the universal covering, of course, things become periodic of period 1. And for some reason, I will keep just period 2, periodic a picture within a band of width 2. Just because this is what I will recollect and use in the proof, that you have such a picture. So this is just taking the previous picture, I could have done it, if I had prepared better, I would have done it like, I first pass to the universal covering, I get a picture which is periodic of period 1, and then I erased, this is what I did on my computer, I took Mitsu's picture and I erased the extra things. So here you should see that this is of width 2, so you have something repeated periodically. And I kept this. So I just want to explain on this picture what it looks like. So on the upper part, above this line and that line here, the map is just univalent. It just maps the band above this part univalently to the band above this part. And now if I restrict to this rectangle that I surrounded with black, and I drew here the preimage of the rectangle. Now, on this part, it's just a ramified covering of degree 2, ramified exactly above one point. So it's two two kind of things. It's not a ramified covering, but this is what Inoue and Mitsu called incomplete ramified covering. There is one part which is, where it's just of degree one, it's just univalent, and there is another part where it is just a ramified covering of degree two. Okay, and you can see that this will have two preimages, one here, one there, and the blue on top here has two preimages, one here, one there. So it's really a ramified covering of degree two. And if you can find a map which has this structure in the universal covering, a bound on top maps univalently what I will call the head, here the head map, so the tail will be at imaginary part tending to plus infinity, this will be the tail of my picture, and now I will have the head of the picture mapped with degree 2 to try and give some idea of what is going on. Okay, so now the theorem Inoue and Mitsu were talking about yesterday is that when you take a map, so I wrote it this way, if you take a map F which is in exponential 2i pi theta F naught, so you take a map which fixes 0 with derivative 1, you post-compose it with a rotation so that it fixes 0 with derivative exponential 2i pi theta, then this map will be renormalizable. I will try to explain on the board because I did not do it on the PDF presentation. It's renormalizable with a renormalized map being in the class exponential minus 2i pi over theta f naught. So this is the main thing I will use from Mitsu's talk. It's F1. it's F1. So if you start with a map within class F1, you post-compose it with a rotation. So with you want to be sufficiently close to multiplier 1 at the origin. So this condition theta is close enough to 0. Which you can put as if the first entry in the continued fraction of the number theta is larger than some capital N, then you can renormalize, and the renormalization will be in the class F naught. Okay, so I will turn on the light. Well, I will do it quicker. Because I will try to explain on the board again what Mitsu showed yesterday. Why you can, how, what does it mean you can renormalize? Because not only I will use this result, but I will use the construction of the renormalization. Because I will have to understand how the dynamics of the map F is related to the dynamics of the renormalization R of F. So therefore I have to explain how the two dynamical planes are related. So, if you start with a map S, which has a domain containing 0, and it means I map it to the domain of, well, I map it to a disk of radius R is 4 over 27 exponential chi, 4 pi, sending 0 to 0. The first thing Mitsu explained is that you first understand how it goes in class F1 when you fixed multiplier 1 at the origin. And what he says is that you have the critical point somewhere and you will be able to find, so first 0 is a double fixed point and there is a Fatou coordinate near 0 with an attracting petal where the dynamics is conjugate to translation by 1. Second result, you can extend this Fatou coordinate up to the critical point so that the image by the Fatou coordinate that he called phi attracting will be a right half plane, and you can normalize things if you want the right half plane with a real part positive. So this is a strong theorem already telling you that when you iterate, for example, the critical point, then the whole orbit will be trapped to zero, cannot escape outside of the domain. So within this class, I did not mention, but I recall that it's a compact class. Within this compact class, the critical orbit is always captured by zero. But moreover, you can extend the plateau coordinate so that it goes up to the critical point with image right as plane. In this plateau coordinate, so this is, well, I will just define one more thing. I will look at, now in this right as plane, I will look at the rectangle coming from -2 to 2 and going from 0 to 2 on in real part and in imaginary part going from -2 to 2. This defines me some rectangle in my plateau coordinate. And this is what is drawn in this picture. It's a rectangle there. Okay, if I go to plateau coordinate, this is precisely the head of the domain I was looking at previously. How do I go back? This is just this rectangle going from 0 to 2 in real part, going from -2 to 2 in imaginary part. And this will be going to plateau coordinate. This will be the head. And if I quotient by the translation by 1, this project to my disk for the renormalization. So this will be the goal of my renormalized map. Now I have to define the domain of the renormalized map. And to define the domain, I have to look to find the preimage of this rectangle in the plane of S. So I will find the preimage by pulling back preimages. So it will be a domain somewhere, which will be mapped by some iterator of F, some high iterator of F. It will be mapped to this rectangle as a ramified covering of degree 2, as here I must have the map mapping the head to the head with ramified covering of degree 2. So the whole trick. So the critical value of S is here, so if I pull back once, I will get some picture which is mapped with degree 2 to its image. For this, I just need the rectangle to be inside the range to be able to pull back. But because I have some dynamics where it's of degree 2, other dynamics where it's of degree 1, I have to be careful. And this is all the business, being sufficiently careful, to say that when you pull back by S, you take the connected component that was intersecting the previous one, and this is mapped, this is relatively compact in the domain, and is mapped as a ramified covering of degree 2. And if you go further, then you take this one, you have two preimages, one on top, one on bottom. Each mapped one would be compactly contained in the domain, mapped univalently, and you can pull back further and further, infinitely many times, and you will have a chain of domains converging back to zero, all of them being compactly contained in the domain of the map. So I start here, I pull back, first preimage, second preimage, third preimage here, which is mapped with degree 2 to the rectangle, and I can pull back again, again, again. This is, I think, the seventh preimage, and if I go on, I will converge towards zero. And the whole business is to show that, so this picture is drawn for the map where you don't perturb with a univalent map, you just keep the polynomial z times 1 minus plus z to the square. And all the business of Ino and Shikura is to show that all this construction works with domains compactly contained, even if you perturb with a univalent map. Just because you are inside the, so to give some idea of the size of things, this is 0, this is 1/3, and the domain is a slitted plane coming up to -1. So all the trick is to say that near the origin, the univalent map has a small effect of distortion, so it does not change too much the shape. And you have to control when you pass close to -1 that it remains compactly contained. And it's not that easy. It needs delicate estimates. But all this work. So now I have my domain that comes back to zero. And near zero, I have a repelling plateau coordinate that conjugates the dynamics to -1, to translation by 1. So I can look at this, the image of this set, which is close to zero. I can look at the image of this set by the repelling plateau coordinate. And this gives me the head. And if I go by the inverse of the repelling plateau coordinate. I iterate f until I come to this rectangle, and I go by the attracting plateau coordinate. This gives me a ramified covering of degree 2. So the other thing is that not only you can do this on the head, which is the most difficult part, you can also do it on the tail, and the tail maps univalently. So if I redraw the picture, well, it's drawn over there. What you get is you have a sequence of domains, a checkerboard piece, where the dynamics is univalent, and you have a chain of tail of cylinders which map to each other univalently, and then you attach the head, which are mapped univalently to each other until you come to the critical point and it's mapped with degree 2 to its image, and then maps univalently afterwards. Okay, so now if you look at this map, you go by repelling plateau coordinate, you iterate the map, you go by attracting plateau coordinate, it will precisely have the structure of the Inoue-Shishikawa class, F1. So now, to do this construction, what do you need? You need to know that when you pull back the domain, the backward orbit remains compactly contained. You just need to pull back finitely many times to come from a repelling plateau coordinate to an attracting plateau coordinate. When you start perturbing the multiplier, what happens, and I will draw it on the other board, when you start changing the multiplier, then the two fixed points split away from each other. One remains at zero and there is a second fixed point. But then you can still define, and I will use this, so I will call this a perturbed petal. So for me, a perturbed petal is a perturbation of both attracting and repelling petal at the same time. And of course, it's easy compared to the previous thing. You can still define a perturbed petal going up to the critical point for the small enough perturbation. You can still define your rectangle, and when you pull back with finitely many iterates, you still have something coming back in the repelling petal and mapped univalently to the rectangle, to the head, the head mapped to the head with ramified covering of degree 2. And you can do this for the whole class because the class is compact. You can find a small enough perturbation for all elements in the class, and because the class is compact, and the construction is continuous, you can just find for a small enough perturbation, you can make sure that you have this construction still available. As Mitsu explained, so let me draw the head a little further. As Mitsu explained, now when you perturb the situation, you can go on iterating your rectangle, and it will come in between. So if I go on iterating the rectangle, it comes in between the two fixed points and goes out on the other side. And so you have a first return map starting in the head, map with degree 2 to the rectangle, and going on, now you come back to the same region and you have a dynamical system which corresponds to start at the head, iterating until you come back, and you have a map, a dynamical map. So if I just conjugate with the perturbed plateau coordinate, I just have a map going from a head to a neighboring rectangle with this structure. And I had the tail and I have exactly this structure. And this is the renormalization. So you just quotient by translation by one. You just look at this picture in CMOD. And this is the renormalization. And you have a tail. It depends on which point you want to look at. So here I always turn around zero. I always turn around one point, but I could choose to turn around the other one, but it's another story. So the I also have a tail going the other one. I also can take the other side, and I have a second renormalization on the other side with another tail, another head. So I have two renormalization depending on which side I'm looking at. I will always look at the side of zero.
The tail goes to zero. That's
yes.
I would have expected on the basis that I'm drawing that the tail would go to the exit. Maybe I'm wrong.
What do you call the exit? I have 2 points in
yes.
The.
And the tail might have the.
You mean might spiral? Is that what you mean? Well, just because I have an indifferent multiplier, the orthogonal curve do not spiral. You just, but usually if you don't, you could do this construction with complex, not the multiplier not being a rotation, and then it will have to spiral more. Okay? So it's true that a priori it could spiral, but as long as in Mitsu's assumption, this is zero. I look at multiplier exponential 2i pi theta, so this is theta is equal to zero. As long as you look at a sector close to the theta of real, then it won't spiral too much. And if you want to spiral for the tail, you have to up. Well, I guess if you approximate this one, it will spiral quite a bit, but I only approximate on the real axis. It's easier for my pictures. No, I have one repelling fixed point, but the other one, which corresponds to a Ziegler disk, is indifferent. And this is why I was saying the tail does not spiral too much. Just because in all my talk, I assume that zero corresponds to a Ziegler disk situation or an indifferent situation, Kramer situation, so the multiplier is just a rotation there. You can do more things, but for my talk, I am in this situation. So one point is repelling, and the other one is indifferent. Okay, so this was to try and explain that because I will heavily, my proof is heavily relied, so I did not mention it was written, it's a proof of me and Arno, and we, so it's a joint work with Arno, of course. So the proof will heavily rely on the fact that on this construction of renormalization. So I know it's not a trivial construction, but if you want to understand these things, you will have to get accustomed to it. I'm sorry about it. Anyway, so now I told you that when the multiplier is zero, the critical orbit is infinite. Just because you capture it by an attracting petal. So as a corollary of this construction, you can see that when the entries of theta are all large enough and you are in the, so if you are in this class and the multiplier is, so if you are in the Inoue-Shishikawa class and the multiplier at zero is close enough to zero, then the orbit of the critical point will have to go through the exbiter. Just because you can renormalize, it will have to go around the exbiter. Just precisely because, so this is the map. F, I will call it F naught. And if I look at the renormalized map, R of F naught, that I call F1, it is in the same class. Here, if I have rotation number 1 over N, so let's say 1 over A naught, 1 over A1, plus 1 over A2, plus and so on, then my new rotation number will be minus 1 over A2, plus 1 over A3, plus and so on. If all the entries in the continued fraction are large, then theta naught is close to zero, theta 1 is close to zero because it starts by 1 over capital N plus something, theta 2 will be close to zero, and so on. iterating once the critical point for F1 corresponds to doing a first return. It corresponds to iterating omega for F0 a large amount of time. Essentially, it corresponds to iterating A1 times. Iterating for F2, iterating the map, the second row normalization once at the critical point corresponds to iterating the first row normalization A2 times at the critical point, which corresponds to iterating the map F0 A1 times A2 times at the critical point. If you can renormalize infinitely many times, and that you can do if all the entries are sufficiently large, then you will be able to iterate infinitely many times at the critical point without the critical point to escape. So this is the first control on the post-critical set. There is a domain for the map F0, and you know that the critical orbit remains in this domain. All the post-critical sets remain in this domain. This is a control on the post-critical set. I did not mention, but Mitsu, I guess, did it yesterday. The quadratic polynomial is not in the class. And this is bad for us because we are working with the quadratic polynomial. But for the quadratic polynomial, it's not difficult to do that. You can do exactly the same construction of renormalization provided the angle of rotation is small enough. So if the entries are large enough, you can start with the quadratic polynomial. You can do a first renormalization, and the renormalization will be in the class F1. And afterwards, all renormalization will be in the class F1. So this gives you a domain of renormalization for the polynomial F0. So what is this domain of renormalization for the polynomial F0? So in my mind, F0 is a quadratic polynomial. So you start with the quadratic polynomial. This is the other fixed point. And you define the domain by taking the tail and the head of the domain, which allows you to define the normalization. You look at all the successive iterates. This gives you something that with Arnaud we call the snail. I hope you see what why we call it the snail. No, it's not obvious, but it's going like this. So if I add the pieces going through the editor, and I go a little further, it will end up going out, and I close with a repelling petal. How should it be? Like this. Well, this is the range. This is the set which enabled me to define the renormalization for the renormalized map with the tail somewhere, the head mapped to some the same structure, and here it was don't remember what it looked like, but this is this picture in SATU coordinate, and I put in between all the iterates to come from the domain of definition to the goal of the map. And I call that U naught of S. And I know that the post-critical set of F naught will be completely contained inside this domain, because when I renormalize, the post-critical set is completely contained in the domain of the renormalization. So this is a control on the post-critical set. I have a domain defined for my map F naught that contains the post-critical set. And in particular, and this is the theorem of Inoue and Shishikura, in particular, in this setting, if I take the quadratic polynomial P theta, where the entries in the continued fraction of theta naught are all big enough, then the post-critical set cannot be dense in the Dreyer set, because it is contained in some region, and you can see, for example, that this region does not contain the second fixed point of the polynomial. For example, the fixed point of the polynomial P theta, the beta fixed point, I think? The beta fixed point is not contained in the closure of the post-critical set. So this And this had been an old question of whether you could find a quadratic polynomial for which the with the Kramer point for which the or maybe with the Ziegler for which the post-critical set would be dense in the GS set. If you take all the entries large enough, then in Ouhenshikwa tell you this is not possible. If you take all the entries bounded, then I guess Karsten, Hermann, Shantek, or I don't know, probably Hermann, Shantek, Duadigis tell you it's not possible because it's contained in the Jordan curve, which is just the boundary of the Ziegler disk. So what is left in between? Well, you still have some cases to cover, but it's unlikely that the post-critical set can be all the GS set. Because for Inoue and Shishikua's construction, you should always think that n is equal to 1. And that this covers all numbers. Just for technical reasons, for estimates, you cannot do control this. Okay, so now what is left for me? All the work has been done by Inoue and Shishikua. What is left for me is that I not only do I want the post-critical set to stay in some bounded region, but I want it to be contained in an epsilon neighborhood of some unperturbed Ziegler disk. So I have to promote this construction. So if I start, so the picture is the following. I have a Ziegler disk now. If I start with a bounded rotation number, I will have a Ziegler disk sitting in this region. And I define the neighborhood of the Ziegler disk. And now what I have to do is to show that I can make my neighborhood arbitrarily small, arbitrarily close to the Ziegler disk, in order to control things. Let me move to maybe next slide. So I must promote from some neighborhood to an epsilon neighborhood, essentially. And I will just do that by, instead of considering just the first domain of renormalization, I will say, okay, I can, not only I can renormalize once, but I can renormalize twice. Therefore, I have a domain of points where I can renormalize twice, which is a smaller domain. A domain of points corresponding to renormalizing three times, which gives me a decreasing sequence of domains. And then I will have to show that this sequence of domains decreases to the Ziegler disk in case the rotation number is of bounded type. Okay, so the theorem A prime, you can read it, or you are allowed not to read it. It's just the same as in the quadratic polynomials, except that I replace the assumption that I start with a map which is the quadratic polynomial. I can just state the same theorem with any map in the class of Inoue and Shishikua, and you put F1 instead of F0. So if you start with a map in the class of Inoue and Shishikua with rotation number of bounded type, all the entries sufficiently large, when you will perturb it, then the semi-distance of the post-critical set to the unperturbed Ziegler disk will be small, if you take a sufficiently small perturbation. So as I was explaining, the goal is to construct an open set UN of S. It corresponds to the set of points UN of S corresponds to the set of points where you can renormalize n times, ending in the set U0 for the nth renormalization. And that construction, I have to explain how you go from the plane of the renormalization back to the initial plane. Since this is not just restricting to a subdomain, but it is gluing Riemann surfaces, uniformizing, the correspondence is not so clear. So I have to be a little more rigorous about this step. It took us quite a while with Arnaud to see how we could define correspondence to in order to work with it in an efficient way. The construction will depend continuously on the map. See, it just, as Mitsu said yesterday, the definition of the FATU coordinate depends continuously on the map. And this domain is defined by saying, take the rectangle in FATU coordinate. So the rectangle here in FATU coordinate moves continuously with the map. And then I take some preimages of this domain, but I take a finite number of preimages. And because I take a finite number of pre-images, this depends also continuously on the map. So the construction of the domains I will give, the domain will depend continuously on the map. Not yet. It's just the, yes. To know it depends continuously, I don't use it. If I tell you that it's because it takes me finite time to turn around, I'm using it. But these domains, you know that if you look at the domain corresponding to just the perturbed petal, and you look at the image of the rectangle and the tail, so it's something like this. The image of the rectangle is something that moves like this. So if I add the tail, I add this region, this will depend continuously on the map, even if my rotation number has a very large entry. So for the continuous dependence on the domain, on the map, I do not really need, I think, to use its bounded type. It's just a little later that I will have to use it. So for each fixed n, I insist that I'm a first fixed n, then I define my domain un of f. This depends continuously. And the last thing is, now I will use the assumption, if my number is of the bounded type, then the domain, the successive domains un of f, shrink down to the Ziegle disk. And you should be convinced that this is enough, because I will start with a map having a rotation number of bounded type. And I want I want to show that perturbed post-critical sets are contained in the delta neighborhood of the Ziegle disk. So I first choose n large enough so that the domain un of f is contained in the delta over 2 neighborhood of the Ziegle disk. And then I perturb the map sufficiently little so that the domain un of f prime is contained in delta neighborhood of the initial Ziegle disk. And then I say that un of f prime contains the post-critical set of f theta prime, and I am done. So my remaining task, I think I still have 15 minutes, or when did I start? Okay. So in the 5 coming minutes, I have to define the domain un of f. So it all is in the corresponds to. I have to explain why it contains the post-critical set. And I have to tell you that if it's on bounded type, you have a decreasing sequence. This makes a lot to say in 5 minutes, but I will try to do it. Okay. I told you that... stop the computer. You can turn on, and I will use the blackboard, I think. So it's over there. What? F1. The difference is that theorem A was stated for the quadratic polynomial, and this is just for any class map in the class F. It's the same theorem, but just in the class. The same theorem holds in the class F1. And the quadratic polynomial was not in the class F1, by the way. So, it's a different theorem, but exactly the same. I start with my map F0. I can renormalize it. This is R of F0. And I can go on renormalizing. And I will end up with R renormalized n times of F0, which is Fn. For this Fn, I can define a tail, so I can define a perturbed petal. In this perturbed petal, I can define the goal with the head and the tail. So, and I can define the domain of the renormalization, the next renormalization. And as I said, I take the kind of snail, and this was un of f, u0 of fn. So one possibility we tried with Arnaud was to say, take this domain and look, pull it back try and pull it back to the previous level, and then try and pull back to the previous level, and so on. And doing it, controlling things at each step, was a difficulty. So we changed our mind, and we said we will go directly from the dynamical plane of FM to the dynamical plane of F0, not doing the intermediate steps. So what will allow us to do this, is that you can, we won't pull back everything, we'll just pull back part of it, is that you have a correspondence between the plane of FN minus 1 and the plane FN, which is, if I draw the perturbed Fatou coordinate for FN minus 1, the perturbed petal, and then I go by attracting Fatou coordinate, by perturbed Fatou coordinate, this is mapped just to a vertical strip. And when I take the exponential 2i pi z, I take the quotient by the translation by 1, the vertical lines are mapped to rays. And what I can do is to lift the petal of Fn. I can lift the petal which enables me to define the renormalization of Fn. So I have lots of lifts. It's just taking the logarithm. So essentially what I get when I lift, I get a collection of petals, of perturbed petals, which will be mapped. So zero is mapped to plus I infinity. The other fixed point is mapped somewhere and it has several lifts. I have a collection of petals lifting the perturbed petal for Fn. So I choose one of them. It's just taking the logarithm. So it becomes periodic, and since I take 1 over 2 I pi logarithm of z, it's periodic of period 1. So I have a collection here of petals. So the point is, here it's mapped by translation by 1. Here each petal is mapped to the next one by the map F. So I don't know if I respect the translation by 1. But. And then I go on. This white petal, I can lift it to the previous level. So it gives me a new petal. And inside I see my green petal. So I lift this green petal. And I can move back to the initial plane of F0, where I will see a nested sequence of perturbed petals. So you should not think that this nested sequence converges towards zero, because it contains, for example, correctly, for example, they all can contain the critical value. So here they will all contain the critical value and they won't shrink down to just zero. So you should imagine them very, very long, stretched along, if you have a Ziegler disk, you should imagine them stretched along internal rays of the Ziegler disk. Okay, I have this situation. So I will maybe enlarge a little what I see here. So all my lifts are univalent. When I come from this, I take the branch. So these are simply connected domains avoiding zero. So when I lift, it's univalent. And all the composition of things are univalent. So it helps me to say what I see there. I see it back in the initial plane of F0. So in the initial plane of F0, I will see a domain and a range for the n plus one renormalization. So here I see a domain with a tail and the head, and I see this is the range, and I see a domain. I could put it in red to distinguish it. I see here, stretch along. I see a domain. And now I have a map there. I have a map sending the red region to the purple region. And this map is essentially turned once, one time in the exhibitor. So it's essentially, you can check, that if the rotation number here is 1 over AN plus 1 over something, the number of steps it takes is essentially, you will iterate n f a n times plus some bounding number of times, maybe 2-3 times. If you look at what it gives you coming back to this plane, tells you that the map F naught, you have the map, you have an iterate of the map F naught coming from the red to the purple, and this iterate will essentially be F iterated Qn times plus L times Qn minus 1 times. So you have a correspondence between what corresponds to iteration over there and iteration here in terms of the approximants of the continued fraction. You can control those things. And now what happens is that when you will go to the renormalization, L is 2 or 3. L is something completely bounded. So, I know that I'm over time. Let me just finish defining the set UN, and I won't have time to explain. Here, I can iterate Fn plus 1 at the critical point infinitely many times. What it precisely means is that if I iterate the map here, I will come back in the red infinitely many times. But coming back one iteration there corresponds to an iterate controlled by less to come from the red back to the red. It would take me a time which is less than an plus L. And it says that the critical orbit comes back from the red but infinitely many times in this region, and that the time it takes in between two steps is less than Qn plus L Qn minus 1 times. So it comes back very often. And so to define my set Qn of F, I can just define it by taking the Qn plus L Qn minus 1 iterate of the red stuff, and this will define me some set containing the purple and the red. Starting the iteration in the red, I took all the iterates until I come back to the purple. Does not take too many iterates. And this will be my set UN of F. And because my critical orbit comes back from the red to the red to the red with less than Qn plus L Qn minus 1 times, the set UN of F contains all the post-critical sets. Okay, I'm sorry, I don't have time to tell you why this UN of F is a small neighborhood of the Ziegler disk, but...